Hello, welcome back to Coffee with a Calvinist. This is a daily conversation about scripture, culture, and media from a Reformed perspective. Get your Bible and coffee ready and prepare to engage today's topic. Here's your host, Pastor Keith Foskey.
Welcome back to Coffee with a Calvinist. My name is Keith Foskey, and I am a Calvinist. Today, we're going to be doing another Caffeinated Calvinist Roundtable with your favorite guest hosts of the Coffee with a Calvinist program, Sam Brown and Richard Roden. Hello, gentlemen.
Woot, woot.
Hello, Governor.
Hello, Governor. He's been waiting to see. He wants to smile. He's so happy. And I'm so thankful. That was Richard, by the way. Old White Lightning is giving us the big smile. And we all have nicknames now. We are Richard is White Lightning, Sam is Mac Tonight, and I am the Papa Bear or Big Daddy, depending on who's talking to you. Okay, so that's has no meaning whatsoever to today's program. But today's program's going to be an opportunity for us to share our opinions on a recent book. We want to this year, as we're doing the podcast, we're going to try to do a group podcast about once a week, depending on our schedules. We're going to try to do that together. And we're going to intersperse things that are fun, like we did back at Christmas time. We did our eggnog challenge, and we did our taste test of the different types of, we did several things. We did Christmas movies and all kinds of stuff. But we also want to intersperse it with some important things. We've talked about politics a lot. But today we're going to talk about something that kind of gets away from politics, gets away from some of those things. And today we're going to talk about a book that all three of us recently read. And we read it for two reasons. One, we read it because we thought it would be beneficial for us to read, but also because we wanted to provide a review for you, the listener, to tell you whether or not we think, one, that this book is worth your reading, and also how this book has encouraged us, affected us, what we agree with, what we may disagree with in this book. And that's what we're going to be doing over the next half hour, 45 minutes, is we're going to be giving our thoughts of the book. And the book is entitled 12 Ways Your Phone is Changing You by Tony Rinke. 12 Ways Your Phone is Changing You. And I want to just read a quick synopsis of the book. This is the synopsis that's given on the Amazon page. If anybody's interested in going, you can go to the Amazon page. Currently, the book itself is for sale for $19.95 as an audiobook, $11.85 as a paperback book, and you can get the Kindle version for just $10.99. So it's not a break the bank book, and it's not a huge book. And this is what it says under the synopsis of the book. It says, when the smartphone was introduced, many of us quickly adopted it into our lives, too quickly to stop and think about the future costs we were unboxing along with the device. Now, blessed with this revolutionary piece of handheld technology, we try to wield it with wisdom, fending off anxieties about how our digital habits impact our spiritual health. Drawing on the insights of numerous thinkers, published studies, and his own research, writer Tony Rinke identifies 12 potent ways our smartphones have changed our lives for good and ill. Rinke calls us to cultivate healthy habits for maximizing the blessing that we and others can receive through our phones and grow in the wisdom we need to avoid the many pitfalls that exist with such a powerful tool. Now, again, that's the Amazon explanation of the book, or the Amazon blurb about the book. And the sort of the line, the tagline is, do you control your phone, or does your phone control you? And right off the bat, I'll say this, we're all going to give sort of an initial impression of the book. And right off the bat, I want to say just the title itself was to me somewhat frightening, because sometimes I don't want to know the things in my life that are negative. Sometimes it's like when I was a kid and my mom was yelling at me and I put my hands over my ears and go, la, 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 because I don't want to hear what she has to say. Sometimes when someone poses something that you know is going to be a dig into your, into something that you already know is a problem but don't really want to admit it, sometimes that is not something you're looking forward to. And the first of us three to read this book was Richard. And I remember when Richard posted online that he was reading, I think he took a picture of the book or something and posted it online. I said, boy, I don't want to read that. I said, I'm being honest. I said, I would be nervous to have somebody hold a mirror up to me, because I know there are areas of my life where my smartphone has definitely been a negative in my life. And so I want to say right from the bat, I think for a lot of people, this the first impression of the book is going to be the title is going to be enough to sort of frighten them away, or for them to say, oh, I don't know if I want to hear this yet. I'm not ready for this. I'm not ready to necessarily set my phone down and walk away from it. So right away, I was a little daunted by the title of the book. How about you guys? What was your first impressions? Just when it was either first handed to you or first recommended to you, what were your thoughts? I'll start with you, Richard, since I already mentioned you as being the first of us to foray into this, or to venture into this foray.
For me, I was introduced to it because I saw Adam Page posted about it, and I was the opposite of you. When I saw the title, I wanted to know. When I saw the title, 12 Ways to Change It,
You're a better man than me. Just go ahead and say it.
It has nothing to do with that. It just
well, we know that he thinks that, Keith. So.
Oh, is that?
But no, I wanted to know because I know the phone's a problem. Because unlike a lot of people, I have I check the screen time, and my screen time's the average is just horrible. So I went into this with optimism. So my first impression was this is going to be good for me. So that was my first impression of it. And you want me to go into the easy read and those things?
Okay. So your first impression was you wanted to know, like right. I said, I was a little nervous because it's hard sometimes being honest with yourself. And I knew this book was going to make me take an honest look. How about you, Sam? Did you have any thoughts either way going into it? Or you what were your thoughts?
So I was actually very excited by the topic. I hadn't heard of this. I'm not familiar with Tony Rinke. I understand he, is associated with Desiring God, which is John Piper. And I'm not a huge John Piper fan, so I wasn't really familiar with this guy.
John Piper is cited a lot in the book.
And he wrote the foreword. So I don't dislike John Piper. I'm just not, just not one of the people that I closely follow. So I wasn't familiar with Tony. I was excited about the concept of the book, though, because it's something that I think about deeply and often is this sort of the way technology has changed our lives. You know, it wasn't 200 years ago that they invented the cotton gin, right? And suddenly now we have this computer in our hand that holds the entire depth and breadth of human knowledge in our hand. And we use it to complain to each other and access porn, and that's really all people use their phones for. So
yeah, that and watch videos of people falling all over themselves while they're using the restroom.
So I was super excited about it. Thought it was a great concept and was really excited about it.
Well, good. I want to just make a mention before we go into some more of our initial thoughts, because I do have a few questions for you guys. I want to mention if you go to the Amazon page and you look at the reviews, it is a very highly reviewed book in the sense of it's got a 4.8 out of 5. So the people who have reviewed the book have reviewed it positively. And I always do this no matter what if I'm buying something or if I'm reading something, I always go to the negative reviews because I want to know and it only has 2 1-star reviews. And the first 1-star review is little nonsensical because both of them are basically saying that they don't like it because it doesn't mention that it's a Christian book, that it just says 12 ways your phones are changing you. And that's legit. I mean, it doesn't necessarily say 12 ways your phones are changing Christians. It says 12 ways your phones are changing you. But as soon as you begin reading, you can tell he's writing from a Christian worldview. And so one of the negatives here, you know, says, I bought this as a lightning deal on Prime. I'm a social sciences, communication, American culture student, and a marketing professional. So books like this interest me. First of all,
apparently he's not, because you just have to look at the dust cover and it says the soul satisfying glory of our Savior. As Tony Ranke writes for Desiring God. I mean, on the cover of the book, it tells you that it's a Christian book. This person obviously claims to be a student of American culture, but apparently they can't read very well.
Well, I don't know. Sorry, my camera fell.
Were you attacked?
No, but in his defense, and if I don't want to defend, I don't know the guy to even be defending him, but in his defense, maybe he had the digital version and maybe it didn't have that tagline. I don't know. I know the phrase 12 ways your phone is changing you isn't necessarily Christian, but here's the thing that I noticed. He's a social sciences, communication, American culture student. What could he possibly hope? I mean, what is he going to do with his degree other than become a teacher of the same stuff? What are you going to do with that? I have a degree in social science. You know what it does? It lets me teach social science. That's the only thing I could do with my degree, is if I was not a preacher, I could take my degree down to the school and I could go and become a social studies teacher, basically would be what I would be qualified to do. I don't know anything else social science other than possibly, I guess there's other jobs, but it when I see something like that, it's like somebody who gets a job in, you know, feminist studies. Why? What is the end goal? Anyway, so that again, off the topic, and I apologize, listener, for going, because I don't know this guy. His name is not a real name. It's a tag name.
But I mean, really, isn't that the problem with Clown World now, is that people stumble around like they're bags of meat with eyes, and it's a book about your iPhone changing you. Let's not even look at what it's about. You know, it's just that really, I don't give him a pass, Keith. I don't think you need to give this guy a pass, because he is the problem that's wrong with our society.
His tag, well, okay. You said Clown World, and I just have to let you know, we have a listener who is a member of our church, and this person will know who it is when I mention her. She loves to hear you guys, and she loves this program, and she talks to me about it at church, and she said she wants a Clown World t-shirt.
I've actually got one. It says, "Welcome to Clown World" on the front, and on the back in big letters, it says, "Repent."
Yes. Well, hey, you guys know I got some t-shirt skills, so eventually we'll have to all
make get us some
Clown World t-shirts.
Honk honk.
All right. So, getting back to the book, three quick questions. I'll let you guys sort of give me sort of rapid fire answers on these. One, do you think it was an easy read? Two, do you think it challenged you? And three, did you think it was fair and honest with the subject matter? I'll go last, since I went first last time. Was it an easy read? Did it challenge you? And did you think he was fair and honest with the subject matter? Sam, why don't you go first?
Yeah, I thought it was too easy of a read for my liking. It didn't challenge me at all, which was really the problem. Despite the fact that they touched on topics like techno-fetishism and solipsism, I found the book to be poorly written and pedantic. It's almost like it was written for the everyman, right? It wasn't written to be an intellectual tome, which is fine, because, you know, not everybody's going to want that. But for me, in the books that I've been reading the last several years, they tend to be a little higher level. So I was despite the topic, I was surprised at how, I don't want to say poorly written, just written at a lower level. It was clearly written to appeal to the masses.
Okay. And you said it didn't challenge you. Did you think it was fair, though? Do you think it was fair and honest with the subject matter?
Yeah. And we can go more into this later, but that's another reason why I wasn't challenged. Cause again, these are things that I think of often and deeply. So, I mean, there was nothing revelatory in it for me. It was all pretty much correct. I didn't have many disagreements at all with anything you had to say. It's just, you know, for me and my life experience, been there, done that.
Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. All right, Richard, again, you were the first of us to go after the book because somebody else had given it to you, right? Another pastor had recommended it to you, or?
He had recommended it through Facebook, and I looked it up, and that's what drew me to it. So, far being an easy read, yes, I agree with Sam. It's an easy read. It's nothing written in any difficult, you know, terminology or anything like that. It's something that's easy to comprehend, and most people are going to relate to. You could sit down in an afternoon and knock this thing out if you wanted to, if you had the time. So it's an easy read. As far as challenging me on the, I'm opposite of Sam. It did challenge me in the sense of it helped me put into words concerns I knew I already had, but I really wasn't sure how to identify. I knew I had a problem with the phone, but in what way? And he helped flesh that out some because it gave me clearly defined areas of discussion about cell phone addiction and somewhat revealed some idolatry of my own heart that I can now put kind of an action plan together to overcome for me. And as far as being fair and honest, yes, he was very fair and honest. You could tell he'd done his research. What I like the most is he's not anti-phone in the book. It's not one of those things you're going to read and he's just going to, you need to throw your phone away and get rid of technology. He wasn't that way. Instead, he tries to set forth the idea that balance is the key because we all know smartphones aren't going away. Many people like myself have to use them to run their businesses. So putting down the phone cold turkey isn't an option in today's world. So what he tries to do is find a God-glorifying balance, and he does a good job, in my mind, of helping flesh out what that looks like as he goes through the book.
Amen. Good. All right. Well, I'll answer the same three questions. Was it an easy read? I'll say it was easy listening. As you guys know, I'm an
audio reader.
I'm an audio guy. I do a lot of audio stuff. Just is my way. And I listened to it. Found myself at a certain couple points listening to the same thing again, because I did think there were certain points that were that I needed to, not that I didn't understand them, but I wanted to just try to remember them and take them to heart. And sometimes that's, again, that's the benefit, right? If I'm listening, I just listen to that chapter again. And challenging you, I'm the same as Richard. I think it did challenge me in some of the ways that I said before. I was a little afraid to listen to it because I didn't want to be the guy on the end of the scope being stared down. And I felt like at times that was kind of where I was. I think he was fair and honest. And like Richard said, as far as his, you know, not saying that we have to give up the phone, that's true. I think he was fair there. But there was sort of in the end, you know, the idea of going back to a dumb phone, you know, that some people should do that. And I'm sure there are some who do. Like you said, Richard, when you use it for work, and I know you do because you use it for your ordering and all that things that you do with Little Debbie. We got a Little Debbie man here. That's what we do.
Everything I do is in one app. So
exactly. And I have, I basically have the entire church one way or another contacts me through my phone. And I would say about 40% of the people who contact me through Facebook. If they need me for something, they know they can send a message and I'll see it and get back to them quickly. And that's why just eliminating these things from my life would be very difficult at this point. And so I think he was fair and honest. I just think it's one of those things where, like you said, the balance is going to be tough to find. I have the chapters pulled up. I have the list here. I want to read because it's a 12 step book, not 12 steps, but 12 12 ways your phone is changing you. And these are the ways he mentions. Number one, we are addicted to distraction. Number two, we ignore our flesh and blood. Number three, we crave immediate approval. Number four, we lose our literacy. Number five, we feed on the produced. Number six, we become like what we like. Number seven, we get lonely. Number eight, we get comfortable in secret vices. Number nine, we lose meaning. Number 10, we fear missing out. That was the big one for me. So when we talk about what chapters were most helpful, mine was chapter 10, FOMO, fear of missing out. Number 11, we become harsh to one another. Boy, if that ain't the truth. And then number 12, we lose our place in time. So that's the 12 ways your phone is changing you, according to him. And I want to start with Richard this time, since I started with Sam last time. Which chapter or chapters of the book did you think were most helpful to you? And did you disagree with anything in the book? And was there anything that we'll talk about the application later. Let's just ask those two questions. Which chapter of the book did you think was most helpful? And was there anything that you disagreed with in the book?
Well, several chapters struck me as being helpful, such as the being addicted to distraction, ignoring our flesh and blood, the loss of literacy, which is important, fear of missing out. But the two that hit me the hardest, and I'll focus on these, would be chapter 3, where it says we crave immediate approval, and chapter 7, that the title is We Get Lonely, because these two go hand in hand with me. You guys don't know this about me. I haven't really told a whole lot of people this, so I'm going to be real and raw with your listener for a moment. But my ultimate fear is being alone. And one of the ways I fear that is that I fear that I'll end up alone by doing something that causes friends or family to kind of want to cut ties with me, whether or not I embarrass them or, do something disapproving. It's just a fear I've always had. To kind of help give an example of that, when you asked me to do this podcast, this three-way podcast, I dreaded it because I was fearful I would do something in the recording that would cause you to not want me to do it anymore and exclude me from it later. And I'm not saying that you would do that. It's just that's something I have to deal with, and I deal with it a lot. So social media platforms like Facebook allow for the instant like, the immediate approval of your friends or your family. And it gives you the impression that there are those out there who find you likable to some degree. So in other words, in some weird sense, you can be popular for a moment, especially you get a post that gets a lot of responses, 100 likes, and you get 50 comments and you're having a conversation. You're popular amongst a group of people and it feels good. And it takes away that sense of being alone. But the problem is, as you have interaction with people online, it gives you the sense that you're not alone, even if you're sitting alone at home. But that helps me because I fear loneliness. But unfortunately, as chapter 7 lays out, the very act of having virtual conversation online actually drives me toward the one thing I fear the most, which is that's being alone in real life. See, there's a quote in chapter 7, I actually put it on Facebook, that reads this. It says, the smartphone is causing a social reversal, the desire to be alone in public and never alone in seclusion. So what ends up happening is I get so adept at the social interaction that in public, I tend to hide behind my phone. And he mentions that in chapter 7, that we use our phone as a shield because we don't know how to talk to people anymore. We don't have to engage with anyone. We can do it online just fine because we're behind the keyboard. But as soon as, like he used the example, you walk into a crowded elevator, everybody in the elevator picks up their phone and nobody talks to each other. You hide behind the phone. And so I've noticed that in thinking about this, I'm slowly losing the ability to interact with strangers and other people that aren't close friends or family. I can talk to anybody I know, but you put me in a room and put 10 people I don't know, I don't have to talk. I'm losing that ability to start conversations. I've lost the confidence and the gift of gab, I guess, so to speak. I have difficulty with that.
And the phone makes it easy. I don't mean to interrupt you, but the phone makes it easy to not talk to those people.
Correct.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, I can avoid being alone when I'm actually home alone, but I'm slowly finding myself feeling more alone in a crowd more often. So in the way this has helped me in meditating on these two chapters that struck me the most is, one, losing the ability to talk to people you don't know had these things have consequences, because basically I'm beginning to have the inability to advance the gospel to strangers. If you can't talk to people and socially interact because you're losing that ability, because you're in the virtual world all the time, where if you respond to someone, you got 10 minutes to write it out. You got 10 minutes to think about it. But when you're face to face with someone, there, you don't have that. You've got to be able to interact in the immediate. And so you lose the ability to like advance the gospel, which is a command we've been given to go ye therefore and make disciples. Well, you can't do that if you don't know how to talk to people. And you lose that when you're just in your phone all the time. Social media is taking that from us. And also, meditating on this chapter has helped me come to realize the other thing concerning being alone is that because of Jesus Christ and the indwelling of the Spirit of God within me, though I may feel alone, I'm actually never alone. I've had to come to that realization. I have Christ. I don't have to worry about if I'm by myself or this element of everyone around me forsaking me because they don't like me. Well, Christ has liked me enough to die for me. He is with me. I am never truly alone. And I'm trying to get the grasp on those times that I'm alone at home and I'm by myself. I need to recognize those as not as something that's bad, but those are opportunities to commune with the Lord more deeply instead of trying to escape my current reality by going back into the phone where I'm not alone because I'm in the virtual world. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
So that's where those have helped me flesh that out, because those two things right there connect for me because I struggle with those areas.
Well, I appreciate you being vulnerable there. And I do want to say, and this is just from the heart, we Sam and I love you. And we want continue doing this for a long time, we hope. We wouldn't want to do it without you.
So, actually, I appreciate that, brother. I'm kind of embarrassed by you, Richard, to be honest.
Well, and my wife both. Anyway.
Oh, boy. What blessings we have that all of us have wives.
Somehow. I don't know how I've still got one.
I know. We are blessed among men, all of us.
The Lord is good. The Lord is good.
Yes. All right. So, Brother Sam, same thing. Which chapter did you think was most helpful? And was there anything in the book that you found disagreeable?
So nothing that I found disagreeable, and I do want to be clear. It's not that I didn't like the book. So if what I said earlier led anyone to believe I didn't like the book, that's not it at all. Again, these are things that for a long time I've thought about deeply. So the book wasn't a revelation to me. It was just sort of rehashing things that I've deeply thought about. So I don't really have a favorite chapter. The thing I probably found most agreeable, enjoyed the most, was the introduction, Theology of Technology. I did appreciate that. And of course, you know, one of the things that I was making myself some notes while I was listening to Richard talk, because there's a lot of things going through my mind right now. And 1 Corinthians 10:31, whatever you do, do it all to the glory of God, right? So if we use this little stupid phone that's in our hands that we can do an amazing amount of things with, you know, we use it for the glory of God. And I can't tell you how many times I'm basically the same guy in person as I am on Facebook, social media, you know. So I can't tell you how many times people have messaged me and said, hey, I'm going through this and I just need somebody to talk to about it, right? So that's a blessing, right? Right. God has really blessed me with that and ability to preach the gospel to people, whether it's online or whether it's in person. So there have been several times that's occurred. So I'm grateful for that. And something Richard said really spoke to me about the sort of dopamine hit that we get with the like, or the, you know, the ding, or you know, the hey, I really think you look good with that hairdo. You know, there's basically four neurotransmitters in our brain, endorphins, dopamine, serotonin, and oxytocin, right? And those are all triggered by human interaction. Right. And so dopamine is really the big one that like when you play a video game or you eat chocolate or people give you whenever people give you a hug, there's a scientific study that shows that a 20-second hug will release oxytocin and will make you closer to that person, even if you don't know them. So these neurotransmitters are triggered by social media, and it's something I've been concerned about for a very long time. So that's a danger. So I really appreciated of all the chapters, if I had to pick one, it was the last one, number 12, We Lose Our Place in Time. Cause I think so many people do, you know, they just sit and I just see people just scrolling through their feed just, and it's like, they don't even enjoy it. They're just doing it to do it. Right. And an hour
has gone by. I don't even realize.
Yeah. And I find that shocking because I'm a student of human nature, not like your social scientist friend who wrote the negative review about the book. I'm actually a student of human nature. And one of the greatest times that my wife and I ever had was at Christmas time at the Target near us. There is a Starbucks in the front lobby. So we went and posted up in the Starbucks and just watched people. And it's fascinating. You see people going through this, the range of human emotions, sitting there on this stupid phone, just flipping through it. And then some people slip through it blankly, like they feel nothing. And it's bizarre, but really, and I'm trying to wrap this up, but I got to.
No, you're fine. I'm listening.
Pumping through my mind is the idea of the panopticon. Are you guys familiar with what a panopticon is?
No, sir.
Okay.
No.
It was a building style designed in the 1800s by an English philosopher, and the idea was it was a prison where all prisoners could be seen by one guard in a post in a house, in a little guardhouse, but they couldn't see him. So the idea that you're always being watched, or you think you might always be being watched, is ever present. And they never used them as prisons because they thought it was cruel and inhuman punishment to have people always wonder if they're being watched, yet not knowing if they're being watched. And we've done that to ourselves with cell phones. And I think that's amazing that we don't even consider it these days. We're okay with the FBI and the CIA spying on us. We don't even think about that, how we've given away our privacy and our freedom when not 200 years ago, it was considered cruel and inhuman. So yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that reminds me of, I think it was a meme someone posted. It said, 50 years ago, everybody was afraid that they were going to be wiretapped. And now it's, hey, wiretap, can you give me a recipe for tuna salad? You know? Yeah. It's like we have this device in our house that's listening to every word. And we know it is because it's listening for us to say Alexa or hey, yeah. Google or hey, whatever.
Yeah.
Or hey, Siri. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that was awesome, guys. Let me move on now to this last question. And this is, I didn't get to give mine. Let me give very quickly the chapter I found most helpful was, chapter, 10, as I already mentioned, The Fear of Missing Out. I'll tell you this, growing up, I was, and Richard shared a little bit. I'll share a little bit of me. You know, I grew up, I was overweight. I wasn't very athletic and I wasn't extremely popular. And I always kind of felt like I was on the outside. It wasn't until high school when I joined the band that I felt like I really had a community. You know, in high school I was in the band and I was a little, I don't want to say popular, but I was a little bit more in the group because in the band, you know, I was a little bit more accepted. But growing up, you know, I missed out on a lot of invitations to parties, invitations to join sports teams and things like that. So there is sort of an ingrained fear of missing out in my heart. And like my wife and I, we've talked about this a lot. Like when we host a birthday party, for instance, for one of our kids, we make sure everybody's invited. Like we because we don't want any kid to feel like they weren't invited. You know, it's like a huge deal to us to for anybody to feel like they couldn't come to the pastor's son's birthday party or whatever, because it's not just because I'm the pastor, but just because we don't want anybody to be left out. And so that was probably the chapter that spoke most to me, because I have been left out and felt that feeling. And now, but the chapter spoke more about you're afraid you're going to miss something that's happening, afraid you're going to miss an event, or you won't have the latest water cooler gossip at work or whatever. So it's a little bit of a different perspective, but it's still a real fear that people have. And so the phone drives that fear of missing something. And the thing is, you know what? We would do better to miss a lot of what we do. We would do better to not know all the things that are going on in the world. You know, I don't think our minds were really meant to know about everybody in the world that's suffering all the time, but we do. We know about all the suffering that's going around all the world. And it's, you know, it wasn't too many centuries ago that most people never left their hometown. They never went more than 100 miles from the place that they were born. And now we know about everything around the world. And it becomes so much for our minds to have to deal with. And so I think chapter 10, like I said, was probably the chapter that got my attention the most. I see you with your Bible there, brother. Did you have something you wanted to add, a thought maybe?
Yeah. Speaking of, you know, we just know too much and we're too involved in so much stuff. Matter of fact, our pastor preached on this text not too long ago. It's from First Thessalonians 4, where it says, we urge you, brethren, to excel still the more and to make it your ambition to lead a quiet life and attend to your own business and work with your hands just as we commanded you. It'd be, if you could get away from the phone, it'd be very easy to live a quiet life. There's a fellow at our church. I won't mention by name here because he'd shoot me if I did. but he's got a smartphone because he has to have one for work. But he doesn't have a Facebook page. He doesn't have an Instagram. He doesn't have any social media whatsoever. And I envy this man because when you go up to him and you talk to him about, you say, hey, did you see this? You hear about this? He's clueless.
Yeah, he's not heard about anything.
He's so much happier than the rest of us because he's not bogged down in his mind with all the minutiae of all the drama going on the planet that we're feeding ourselves through social media. This man exemplifies just leading a quiet life. He goes to work. He comes home. He tends to his family. He tends to his dogs. Eats dinner. Hangs out with his wife. Watches the news and goes to bed. I mean, that's what the man does, and it's beautiful. And I wish I could get there.
That guy probably has no idea about the Bernie memes that have been blowing up Facebook today.
He's clueless. he's absolutely clueless.
He's better off for it.
That's what I'm saying. Memes. The people who don't know Facebook.
Commies are not funny. The left can't meme.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I don't remember anything in the book that I specifically disagreed with. He did have a specific part. I want to mention this. If you are a person who's listening to this program and you host your own podcast or you are what might be called a producer of content, I think was the way he described it in the book, because most of us are consumers of content, but, the three of us, we're producers of content. All three of us are part of this podcast. And, you know, I do this podcast every morning, daily. And I produce sermons and I produce YouTube videos. So I'm a content producer as well as a consumer. And that puts me in a different category, not necessarily in a good or bad way. It just puts me in a category of not only am I consuming, but I'm also putting stuff out there that I want people to consume. Therefore, I want it to be accessible and likable, and I want to get the likes. And there's a reason why you're putting it out there, is to get the attention and all that, you know, because you're trying to draw something, you know, like for us, we're pointing people to the gospel, we're pointing people to the church, we're pointing people to the word. There's a reason for it, right? And in chapter 6, he has a special section for producers. If you're a producer of content, here's some things that you can consider to watch out for. So if you are a person who's listening to this podcast and you're thinking of reading the book, definitely focus on that part because it's going to speak directly to you and things that might be pitfalls, not only for the consumer of content, but for the producer as well. And all of us, everybody on Facebook sort of a producer because everybody's Facebook page is like their own little news feed that they get to put quotes and posts and stuff. So everybody's a little bit of a producer. But if you're really out there producing content and spending time, I mean, I spend time every day working on this program. If you're doing that, then it can definitely become a big part of your life in a negative way. All right, guys, I want to ask this. Is there anything in the book that prior to the book you hadn't thought about, but now that you've read the book that you plan to apply to your life after reading the book? And I'll start because I went last time. Number one thing he mentioned that I think would be easy to apply to my own life is getting an alarm clock and leaving my cell phone in my living room at night. Right now, my cell phone is my alarm clock. And for me to do that, though, I have to take an extra step. I have to buy a phone, a real landline phone, to have in my bedroom, because I can't go from 10 o'clock at night till 8 o'clock in the morning without my father or mother or my wife's parents being able to get a hold of us. Because if they have an emergency at 2 o'clock in the morning and I need to go help them or whatever, even church members may go to the hospital. So it's going to take an extra step in my life, but my wife and I have already decided this is something we want to do, is get a landline phone, have that landline phone, have the people that we know have to get a hold of us, the elders of the church, my parents, her parents, are going to have that landline number, and know that after 10 o'clock at night, the phone's in the living room charging and I'm in the bed, and if they, or whatever time, you know, it's not going to be in the bedroom with me. And I think there's some extra benefit to that too. I have heard this. I don't remember him mentioning this in the book, but I had read a study one time that we're awakened several times in the nighttime by our phone buzzing and making noises. And even the light that the phone emits, that blue light, can bring us out of REM sleep. And we don't even know it because we're still asleep, but we're not fully asleep. And it's affecting our sleeping pattern by having the phone near us. So I think this will have a ultimate benefit down the road if I do this. So that's the one big takeaway for me. What about you, Sam? Did you have one?
No, not really. I'm actually taking a lot away from this conversation, actually, far more than I got out of the book. Because again, not that I'm not recommending the book, I actually do recommend it. But these are things that I've thought about deeply and, you know, for a long time. I'm enjoying how differently the three of us have been, you know, affected by this book. I think that's a really interesting paradox, is that how we're all vastly differently affected by the book. And it brings to mind a funny story. So back when MySpace was still a thing, which I wish we could go back to those days, Tom,
for all the, young people, MySpace was something that came out before Facebook, just so everybody
knows. Yeah, it was the original. Tom didn't censor us. You know, he wanted to be our friend.
Tom for president.
That's what I'm saying. So, but anyway, so I used to write a lot on Facebook. They had this MySpace. They had this blog feature where you could blog, and I would do that frequently. And one time I had written about the movie The Goonies. Have you guys seen The Goonies?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Did you just ask me, have I seen The Goonies? Yeah. I am Mikey, but go ahead.
Okay, fair enough. So I had never seen The Goonies as a child.
And I hadn't either.
And I watched it as an adult, and I thought it was stupid.
Richard, just so you know, you are mouth. No. Sam is mouth. Sam is mouth. Richard, you could be Brent, the older brother.
I have no idea who it is.
Right. I hated that movie so much the one time I saw it. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, Hated it.
Right. And I wrote this blog about it. And about how much I hated it. And I have never gotten so much hate mail in my life, and negative comments, and people just attacked me. Like, good friends of mine were angry at me. And it made me realize that when you see something as a child, or you read a book as a child, or something happens to you as a child, it becomes a part of who you are. The term I like to use is the fabric of your existence, right? And people felt like I was attacking them when I said that I hated that book, that movie. So I've been fascinated as a student of human nature, and how I'm very interested in how this book has affected the three of us in very different ways.
I have to correct something. I said Brent. I meant Brand. That's the older brother. That's you, Richard. And of course, Sam would be mouth, and everybody would say that I'm not Mikey. I'm Chunk. So. And I would have to agree.
You're such a nerd. I almost just passed out.
Okay. Well, Brother Richard, thank you, Sam, for that insight. Brother Richard, was there anything that you plan to apply to your life after having read the book?
You're welcome.
Mine is a more general sense, and basically it's trying to follow the theme of the book, find the balance. And I'm going to do that basically by trying to put the phone down at home. Try to reduce the screen time, try to reduce the amount of time that I'm on it, because it's just, it's a colossal time waster. And I'm going to do this in two ways. I'm similar to what you were talking about, Keith. I'm going to use a different phone for communication at home. Try to, may not turn the cell phone off, but put it where it's out of earshot. And we just recently got another phone line, and I just got a dumb phone just to keep it home. So if I have to go somewhere and leave my teenage kids here, they got communication because they're in the landline in this apartment. So I got that. So I'm going to use that to make phone calls, and it's not sitting next to me. And another way to try to cut down on screen time is, and I don't care who you are, where you are, what I'm about to say applies to everyone with a smartphone. I'm going to stop taking it to the bathroom. I don't know how.
Okay. Okay.
To the bathroom.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. I can't get on board with that.
Yeah. I think
that's the one place I have to have it.
Now,
and we've all done it. We've sat there after we're done with our business till our legs are numb, scrolling through all kind of feeds. But the point is trying to find the balance to eliminate some of the time wasted on it and apply that time to other things. Maybe you can call it a smartphone fast, and applying that and using that time for better and more productive things. I'm not producing content the way you are, and you know, yeah, the Facebook feed I have may be a form of producing content, but 9 times out of 10, I'm not sharing anything that nobody cares about anyway.
I tell you what, the whole not taking it to the bathroom thing, that's a big one. I think honestly, I mean, that's, you know, but I'm sorry, continue. That's a big deal. That's a big step.
Well, yeah, that's why I mentioned it, because it's
also one of the reasons why I never use anyone else's cell phone.
That is correct. I don't want to use nobody else's phones. I know where it's been.
That's right.
But I know it sounds all a little crass to mention it, but I mean, everybody does it.
Yeah.
So you could probably cut 10 hours a week out of your cell phone use if you just didn't take it to the bathroom.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to find a balance to use it in a more God glorifying way than what I've been using it, because I'm susceptible to getting in arguments online. I'm susceptible to sharing just divisive stuff, and it's not profitable. As in the opening page of the book, if I remember correctly, he quotes that very thing by Paul. Where is it? And I'll read it real quick. All things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be dominated by anything. All things are lawful, but not all things build up. Well, that's the Apostle Paul speaking, and you can ask the question of the phone, is every use of the phone profitable? And the answer is no. So yeah, it's trying to find those ways that's not profitable and eliminating those uses. That's what I'm going to try to do.
And I think that's very wise. And I think that's the ultimate takeaway from the book. I think that's ultimately what Tony was trying to accomplish. And I think he has accomplished it well in saying that, that certainly the phone is a tool that can be God glorifying. And I like this. He talked about his interview with John Piper, and he said, and sitting on John's desk was a computer and a phone. And John, you know, said how much John Piper said how much he was thankful for those things as being tools that he could use to glorify God. And I imagine John Piper probably does use his phone and his computer to glorify God in a very grand way. And so mm-hmm. so too could we. All right, gentlemen, as we wrap up today's program and we thank our listeners for being with us, I want to ask you one final question. Overall recommendation, and from now on, we're going to try to do these, you know, periodically, do book reviews, do movie reviews, do all kinds of stuff. Would you give this thumbs up, thumbs down, or we're going to go with a meh? A meh means take it or leave it. I'm giving it a thumbs up. Sam?
For the general population, I would give it a thumbs up.
All right.
If you're somebody like me who has, you know, really thought about these things, but to be honest, I've actually, this is one of those kind of books for me where I'm going to put it on my shelf, and in about 6 months, I'm going to read it again.
Okay.
Because again, just one of those books with books like this that affect me this way. I always give them a second chance because there's nothing that I disliked about it. Maybe I was just in a bad mood this week. I don't know. But I would give a thumbs up. I would recommend it for people.
All right. So we got two thumbs up. Richard?
Yes, absolutely. I'd recommend the book. I'll word it the way Adam worded it when he posted it on Facebook. Don't just get the book, run to the book and read the book because it has insight that can help you if you're someone like me and it's applicable. So yes, definitely take the time to read the book and you can get it done in a day and think about the things that it's talking about and try to apply them. So
awesome. Well, guys, thank you again for being on the program and I look forward to the next time we are together. And thank you again, listener, for being with us today for Coffee with a Calvinist. My name is Keith Foskey, and I have been your Calvinist. May God bless you.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Coffee with a Calvinist. If you enjoyed the program, please take a moment to subscribe and provide us feedback. We love to receive your comments and questions and may even engage with them in a future episode. As you go about your day, remember this: Jesus Christ came to save sinners. All who come to him in repentance and faith will find him to be a perfect Savior. He is the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father except through him. May God be with you.